This is KVNF's regional newscast for Thursday, August 26th. I'm Gavin Dahl. In her first public comments since going into hiding, Mesa County Clerk Tina Peters told conspiracy theorist and TV host Mike Lindell over the weekend that neither she nor her staff are allowed into her elections office. The Grand Junction Sentinel reports Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold decertified the county's election equipment over a security breach that Peters allegedly abetted. Her actions are now subject to a criminal investigation by the local district attorney's office and the FBI. Griswold banned Peters' deputy and an election manager from accessing the elections office. But six other election workers who are not implicated in any wrongdoing still have access. The West Region Wildfire Council, based in Montrose, has received two grants from the Colorado State Forest Service. One, for over $730,000, is to increase resiliency within the Uncompahgre watershed and wildland-urban interface. The other, for $178,000, is for a Trout Lake Wildfire and Watershed Resiliency Project in San Miguel County. The Montrose Press reports the money comes from a state forest restoration grant program. Projects include paring back fuel sources, thinning critical evacuation routes, large-scale fuel breaks, and promotion of forest health. The Four Corners Folk Festival has amended health and safety protocols for this year's event in Pagosa Springs over Labor Day weekend. Children under the age of 12, not yet eligible to receive a COVID vaccination, will not be required to obtain a negative COVID test prior to attending, after all. They will have to wear a mask when under the main festival tent, children's tent, or late night tent. All festival attendees over age 11, including ticket holders, volunteers, vendors, staff, and performers, are required to show proof of vaccination or a negative test within 72 hours of arrival at the festival, along with photo ID, in order to attend. When the Telluride Parks and Recreation Board met last week to take up once again a discussion of using Town Park Campground for temporary winter housing, they acknowledged the situation is a crisis. The Telluride Daily Planet reports some board members said a decision to house workers in Town Park would have to come from the town council. Parks and Rec board member Teddy Errico and the Nordic Council registered strong disagreement. The Nordic Council uses Town Park for training trails each winter. The town council directed staff to further research and recommend facility and tenant regulations, utilities, and expenses for operations, maintenance, and management of temporary housing. They're discussing Town Park and other town-owned properties, the Carhenge parking lot, or Canyonlands property east of Clark's. Meanwhile, the town of Telluride has suspended issuing most new short-term rental licenses for 6 months. KOTO's Matt Hoisch reports.
Town Council passed an emergency ordinance to give time to further research the impacts of short-term rentals on the area and depressurize tension ahead of a November election expected to focus heavily on housing. The move comes amid an unprecedented number of new license applications. Town officials say there have been about 40 since the start of August. According to Telluride Mayor Delaney Young, that's much higher than the average of 7.
I'd say that's pretty much a land rush on STR licenses.
The emergency ordinance effectively caps the number of short-term rental licenses in circulation until February 2022. Several other Colorado mountain towns, including Crested Butte and Steamboat Springs, have made similar moves to temporarily restrict short-term rental growth, as they also struggle with housing shortages and a surge in local tourism. For KOTO, I'm Matt Hoisch.
For a lot of the region, opening up your windows at night used to be enough to keep your house cool during the summertime. But extreme heat from climate change has made that more complicated. The Mountain West News Bureau's Maggie Mullen has more.
This is Alex Hernandez's first summer living in Denver. She moved in the spring from Wyoming, and one of the biggest adjustments has been dealing with the heat.
But I feel like it's just like a matter of strategy. Like you're planning your whole life around like these extreme temperatures.
For example, she isn't talking from her apartment because it's too hot. Instead, she's across the street at Finley's, where there's central air and cold beer.
It's a pub, super teeny-weeny, but it's super cute.
Hernandez is one of about 230,000 Denver residents who don't have air conditioning. When temperatures reach the 90s, her apartment doesn't feel that much cooler.
I was taking 3 cold showers a day for a couple of weeks, and it didn't even feel cold.
To complicate matters, Hernandez works the night shift as a clinical lab technician, which means she has to try to schedule her sleep around the heat.
So I get home at 7:30, So I have to like try to fall asleep by 8 so I can sleep at least 5 hours before it gets hot.
The months of June and July were unusually warm all across the region. It's been a record hot summer in several of our cities, including Salt Lake, Boise, Helena, and Reno.
People who've lived here for a long time can really mark the change in how their summers have felt.
That's Grace Rink. She's with the City of Denver's office that primarily deals with climate change. Because extreme heat waves are expected to become more frequent and persistent, she says many residents are having to change the way they cool their homes. Older homes in the area weren't built with air conditioning.
Times have changed. The climate has changed. And now people do need air conditioning in their home to stay comfortable and, in many cases, frankly, just to stay safe.
In June, Rink's office released a renewable heating and cooling plan for the city. It gives residents incentives to shift from gas-powered heating appliances to all-electric heat pumps. Those provide both heating and cooling and are more environmentally friendly. But Denver isn't the Mountain West's only area that lacks air conditioning. According to federal data, more than 20% of the region's households do not use air conditioning. In Sheridan, Wyoming, when temperatures hit a record 107 degrees in June, Bob Gates says his heating and cooling business started getting calls that sounded like this.
I'm ready for AC. I haven't had it before. I've had it. We need it.
Gates has owned and operated Alpine Climate Control for nearly 30 years. He says a lot has changed. AC units have gotten more energy efficient. Plus...
So the outside unit, you know, that makes all the buzzing, grinding kind of motor sound has gotten a lot quieter.
That's the sound of the most popular central air system Gates sells. And since it got hot early this summer and stayed that way, his crew of 14 has been busy installing them in houses.
And then I think, too, you know, we've seen an influx of new people to the area, and I don't know that they're used to the temperature or that they were expecting it to get this hot, maybe.
CU Boulder engineering professor John Zai says central air isn't the only option for homes in the region.
It's getting more and more popular, but it doesn't mean we need that.
Zai says other technologies are well-suited to our climate. That includes passive cooling systems that don't require a lot of energy to function or be highly efficient.
An attic fan, which can draw the surrounding cool air to wash the internal warm air away from the ceiling, from the attic. That's very common.
And in the region's dry environment, Zai says a swamp or evaporative cooler can also work well. That device cools air by passing it over water, which forces evaporation and removes the latent heat. Still, Zai says there's no one-size-fits-all cooling solution. I'm Maggie Mullen.
That does it for Thursday's KVNF Regional Newscast. Special thanks to Kate Redmond. I'm Gavin Dahl.